This episode of the InfoS Podcast is brought to you by CBS All Access. Looking for a new streaming service to add so you can watch more stuff? Check out CBS All Access. Hit up InfoSPodcast.com/CBS and you can get a free 1 week trial to CBS All Access and check out things like Star Trek Discovery, Picard, Survivor, you know, all the other cool stuff that CBS has to offer. Star Trek Discovery, I said that already. You should really watch that. So hit up InfoSPodcast.com/CBS to learn more. Hey, welcome back to the InfoS Podcast. This is episode 235, Robots and Clones and Wars. Oh my. I'm Brian, and with me as always,
Daryl, with my new baby Yoda by my side.
Yeah, and he's in a bag, and he's ready to get punched, and it's awesome, and yeah, so...
There's a special place in hell for people like you.
I just think back to the times before we weren't all trapped in our houses, and I was taking transparent pictures with no background pictures of baby Yoda and putting faucets dripping water down on his head and fists coming in to punch him in the face.
Did you ever see the Africa? Did you send
yeah. Oh, yeah. I sent that to you where it was in beat to them punching him. Yeah, it was amazing. So... the child, I think, you know, is what we're supposed to call him.
It's Baby Yoda. Baby Yoda. Don't care.
He's going to be Din Djarin Jr.
Yeah. Just call him Junior now.
Yeah.
That's actually a good point.
DDJ. Anyway. Man, what a week. We got the end of Clone Wars, which we're definitely talking about this week, obviously, if that didn't... the title of the episode didn't give that away. And we got the season finale of Westworld, which we are definitely talking about as well, if the robots, you know, part didn't give that away. But first we've got some news to hop into. I sent you three news stories, and then I found a rumor that I really want to talk about. So we'll talk about the news first, and then we'll get to the rumor. But yeah, so all right, Westworld season 4. It's been officially picked up. It was picked up for the following for the subsequent season about 6 episodes later than it's normally been picked up, which is kind of like I don't really understand why I know that.
That's one of those minute details.
Yeah, it's the minutia. As Rocket
the
would
say. Well, speaking of Rocket, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. It's coming back for season 4. We're gonna spoil this obviously later on when we're talking about Westworld here. But the real question is Evan Rachel Wood coming back? And I don't see anything that says she's not. I don't see anything that she says there is. I think they're gonna make us sweat it. But yeah, so it's coming back for season 4. We don't know 100% when. We don't exactly know where it's going to go. But this Bustle article very succinctly points out that Jonah Nolan and Lisa Joy obviously have a plan of where they're going. And it looks like 2, maybe 3 more seasons are what they have planned. Viewership bounced back up this week for the initial viewing, which I think is only... the cable numbers, so the people who have like cable and satellite. I don't know if that counts HBO Go or now. Where, you know, I think HBO Go. Okay, so HBO Now. Well, so this is the weird thing, right? So, you know, we share a password for this. And you started watching about 10 minutes before I did, and then I went in. I don't know if that counts as one stream or two. So we could be hurting it. But then again, I've watched it again. I think you watched it again too, right?
So, yeah, I've watched it. I've watched them all twice.
Yeah. So I went back and watched it again. So, but yeah. So I hope we don't have to wait 2 years for the next one, like this one, But it looks like sometime in the spring of 2022 is when it'll come back, if things hold the way they are. But then again, with the COVID stuff going on, that may very well be the earliest that they can, you know, get something out.
Well, the question is, how far are they along with the scripts? So I'm assuming they haven't.
Who knows?
Again, like you said, they have a plan.
Yeah.
And which, when you said that, it reminded me of
how
the
very
plan
Cylon of them.
Yeah. So you knew exactly where I was going with that.
Oh, yeah.
So that's good. They probably have some sort of outline, but I'm assuming it's going to be 8 episodes again.
I hope so. We'll get to it when we're talking about the episode and kind of our thoughts on the season as a whole. But I thought 8 episodes was the exact perfect number of episodes for this season. But yeah, since we're going to talk about this more, let's move on to the next one. The next news bite. It's some Star Wars news. Some good Star Wars news. Our boy Taika is going to direct and co-write a feature theatrical release of Star Wars with Christy Wilson. Christy Wilson Cairns, C-A-I-R-N-S. I'm sorry, Christy, if I pronounced your name wrong. Is going to co-write the screenplay with him. So yeah, this is exciting. There's not a whole lot of news about it yet, other than on StarWars.com they put the, you know, the info out there that he's going to be doing this. And yeah, what are your thoughts on a Taika feature length film after what we saw with the first season finale of The Mandalorian?
Well, the first thing I thought was, why didn't they pick him up for Solo?
Was that an option?
Well, and the reason I said that, just because with the way they were trying to go with Lord and Miller, because Lord and Miller are known for, you know, their comedy, like Taika, I just love his work. Mm-hmm. I love this addition to the Star Wars universe. It's only going to be a benefit to, especially with some of the issues we've had over the last few years with the movies, the TV series. From Clone Wars to Rebels, I know that ended a couple years ago.
Right.
To The Mandalorian now, have all been, for the most part, superb.
Yeah.
It's just that movie phase has been rocky. I mean, we did have, again, I really liked The Force Awakens, loved Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
But still, that was 4 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Rogue One.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even though I appreciate it.
And as good as Rogue One was, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, but as good as Rogue One was, it wasn't without its issues from a production standpoint where, they changed directors. They changed some of the direction of the story. They, you know, and so, yeah, it's the movie part of this franchise is a hot mess right now. And
absolutely.
And they need Favs and Filoni to come in and save that as well. So this is really interesting. I mean, there's other stuff happening. There's a Cassian Andor series coming out. There's an Obi-Wan show coming out. Apparently Leslie Headland is developing something for Disney Plus, which is, you know, kind of has some people up in arms because there's a rumor that it's going to be a female only cast, and you know, who knows, you know, what's happening with that. I think it's way too early to tell, but that sigh is the exact right reaction to have to something like that. Star Wars is for everyone. And then, you know, the whole thing, like, you know, we've got a second and third season of Mandalorian coming out. There's a rumored Rebels animated sequel series or mini series that they've talked about. So yeah, I feel like,
yes.
Sorry, go ahead.
Speaking of that, I did see a headline that said a Sabine spinoff could be a possibility.
Like a live action?
I didn't read
action,
the story.
Or?
It was just, I don't know. That's the one thing I don't know. I just saw it actually when I was watching Clone Wars a few minutes ago. I was just scrolling through stuff, and it just happened to pop up, and I didn't get a chance to read it.
Ah, okay. So yeah, that's something that's rumored at Disney Plus as well. according to a dedicated, this is from a fan site on Disney Plus, in the YouTube channel Kessel Run Transmissions. This is just about the Star Wars spinoff, or the Rebels spinoff. So it, cause it would be Sabine and Ahsoka. And last year on, March 5th, Filoni put out a really cool like graphic of Ahsoka the White and Sabine kind of on a winter torn planet, looking for Ezra. So, but the Taika news I think is kind of cool. I hope we get more Thor Ragnarok and less Hunt for Wilder People sort of a thing as far as his approach goes.
I never saw that.
And I haven't watched Jojo Rabbit yet, but it is on my to watch list this week.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I'll just say that. It is an amazing movie that has a lot of, it has its normal humor, mm-hmm. which, I mean, if you've seen the trailer, you know some of the humor. However, there is a really emotional core to that movie.
Yeah.
That watching it, and this is one of the reasons I wanted to watch it. It was because, again, I know Thor Ragnarok. I love Thor mm-hmm. Ragnarok. But I wanted to see him branch off and see what he, and again, love what we do in the shadows. But something different. And this was, it just hit all the notes for me. I mean, absolutely.
So,
I mean, yes, my love Scarlett Johansson was in it as well. But just from an emotional standpoint, it was an amazing movie.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Awesome.
So, I just think he's going to do great things with Star Wars.
Like his episode of The Mandalorian was really good, and it did a really good job of balancing humor and, action. Because we had the whole thing mm-hmm. with the R2 unit who grew arms and legs to move the gondola through the lava stream. It obviously had Jason Sudeikis and Adam Pally beating the crap out of the child, Baby Yoda, which was my favorite part of the episode. Obviously, he got to introduce Moff Gideon with Giancarlo Esposito. So, I think if he's going to do a movie and it's in that vein with that kind of voice that he brought to it, I'm all for it.
Oh, absolutely.
So, but yeah. All right. So the last bit of news, which you brought to me, and I found it on Deadline, is Joe Russo is in talks close to closing a deal to script Extraction 2. A new, as the title says, new installment of the Netflix smash Chris Hemsworth pick. So I'm assuming Extraction 2, because Netflix doesn't really put out the streaming numbers, has done really well. And
it's been in the top 10.
Yeah, when you get those.
I really like that, how they've done that. That's I love how they show, the top mm-hmm. 10 every day.
Yeah, it's really cool.
That's a really cool addition. And every time I log on to Netflix, which is pretty much every day.
Yeah.
Even if I don't watch it, it's been in that top 10. So.
And it says here that he expects director Sam Hargrave to come back and helm the sequel. If they go forth and make it.
He better.
I mean, we talked about this movie last week. This movie is a ton of fun. It's very much in the Wayne. It's very much in the vein of John Wick, Atomic Blonde, movies like Anna, Peppermint. What's it called? Not the Exterminator.
The Expendables.
No, the one where Denzel did the remake of.
Equalizer.
The Equalizer. Yeah, like it's kind of in that vein. Like, I know the one guy was kind of making fun of the movie, saying it was the white savior version of Man on Fire, but it's definitely like in that vein of like heist, kidnapping, revenge type movie. Do you remember Takers with Idris and Hayden Christensen?
Anakin was in that.
Yeah, and my boy Paul Walker. And Michael Earle.
Michael Ealy was in it, wasn't he?
And then T.I. and Chris Brown were in it. And I remember I didn't know who either one of them really were. And I assumed T.I. was Chris Brown because that was like right around the time that Chris Brown beat up Rihanna. And it's like, oh, he looks like a kind of guy who would beat up a woman. And then I saw the, which is horrible, and I apologize, T.I. Which T.I. in Ant-Man and Ant-Man 2 is fantastic, by the way. but like, then it's like, oh, well, wait, that was Chris Brown. It was like, I was so embarrassed. But yeah, so I could see this being like a franchise, but I don't want this to just be him going in and pulling someone out of a third world country all the time. This was like a really dark version of The Losers. If you remember that movie.
That's another good, nice little callback. Heimdall and Negan in there.
Well, yeah, I mean, Idris was in that one as well. You had Papa Winchester in there, and you had Captain America, Chris Evans in there. Good stuff.
Well, anyway. You had Gamora in there.
Yeah, you had Zoe Saldana.
we're using all their character names.
Yep. But yeah, so it's one of those things where this was a really good. I feel like this is a really good opening salvo to what could be a three to five picture deal. Right. And they're talking about bringing Frank Grillo in, as well. So to join the cast,
that would be a good one.
And his Purge movie, the second one, is my favorite Purge movie. So
it,
just putting that one right there.
Yeah.
I didn't see the first Purge yet. And I didn't really like the series. I didn't finish it. But I really did not like the third movie.
No, I didn't like the third one. I haven't seen the first Purge. I thought the second one was a case of this, when a sequel was better than the original, because the first Purge, it was one of those movies where the potential was there. It's like really cool concept, mm-hmm. at least, you know, for us, you know, movie files or cinephiles.
Yeah.
But it was missing something. And then Frank Grillo came in, and that was a really good, just, you know, fun movie with lots of violence.
Lena Headey and Ethan Hawke were just not like the action-y type people you would kind of wanted in that role. And even though that's post Sarah Connor Chronicles for Lena Headey, like, mm-hmm. she just, like, the way that character was written, like, I just didn't really buy that she was actually going to defend anything.
Yeah. And it was before Dredd, her turn in Dredd?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, she was.
Dude, Dredd is another underrated movie.
So underrated.
All right. So that was the last news bite. Now I have a rumor that I found.
Okay.
Hayden Christensen, speaking of takers, is reportedly returning as Anakin Skywalker in the Kenobi series.
Really?
So, this is a rumor, you know, but it's coming from a source that, you know, broke the Ahsoka Tano news, or claiming to be close to the source that broke the Ahsoka Tano news rumors for Mandalorian. Production is currently in talks with Hayden Christensen to reprise his role as Anakin Skywalker in the Obi-Wan Kenobi Disney Plus series. How big of a role is being debated? So let the theories begin. Now, what we know is in The Rise of Skywalker, Hayden had a bunch of scenes that he filmed get cut out.
I did. I thought I heard he was in a scene, but I was assuming it was. And at that end scene where they showed all the Jedi.
No, apparently there was a scene of him and Rey, not just the Jedi scene. Like, the, you know, they never did that last scene right with the voices. They should have been showing everybody.
Absolutely.
Show don't tell, JJ. Show don't tell. So yeah, I mean, this is just a rumor right now, but how do you feel about the idea of Anakin coming back, and is it Obi-Wan flashbacks to thinking of things? Is he just in the Vader suit?
That's what I was gonna. That
and,
was that's
and we
my
only get
one...
to see the stumpy version of him to see that it's Anakin.
Right.
Like Vader thinks Obi-Wan or assumes Obi-Wan has died, so we obviously can't have Vader chasing Obi-Wan down, which kind of is. as excited as I am because I thought Ewan was great in the role, I feel like this is a really problematic series for Disney to take on.
Look, and this might be unpopular with Star Wars fans, but I agree. I think I love Ewan McGregor as much as I loved him as Obi-Wan. But I don't know if I need this series.
Yeah.
I really don't. And again, if Dave Filoni and, you know, the guys that are in charge with Favreau or
it's Lisa Lisa Choi. Chow is the one who's in charge of it. She was one of the directors during the first season of The Mandalorian. So
okay.
If
they can do something it actually goes hand in hand for me with the Cassian Andor.
I'm sorry, it was Deborah Chow. I want to get her name. Okay. Right. It was Deborah Chow. But yeah, she directed I think at least two. Yeah, she did chapters 3 and chapter 7 of The Mandalorian. Okay. So, and then she was in chapter 6 as one of the X-Wing pilots.
Okay. So it goes along with the Cassian Andor series. However, with at least Cassian Andor, there is ample room to explore stuff.
Well, did you hear the changes that they made to his character that were initially thought about for Rogue One?
No.
They had initially, he was going to be a double agent. He was actually working for the Empire. And then he, you know, realized what they were doing and turned on the Empire. And I find that really, really cool because we've seen plenty of like rebels infiltrate, you know, the Empire, but like the other way around, you know, it's a really interesting story to tell because, you know, why not just say, hey, we're here on Yavin, come blow us up. Like there had to be a bigger picture to it, right? They wanted to root everything out, you know, plant and root and stem. So
see, I actually like that idea.
Yeah. So I hope that's something they play into it because then that adds a whole nother layer to K2SO that he's not necessarily a stolen and reprogrammed droid that perhaps he's, you know, an asset that Cassian is using to be protection for himself and then also to kind of record what's going on.
Right. Yeah, that'd be a cool idea. So back to Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
They are going to be constrained based on, and unless it's going to be a show about flashbacks, they are going to be constrained to a certain area of, you know, it's Tatooine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how interesting is that going to be? I mean, we've been on Tatooine or some type of desert planet how many times in the Star Wars universe?
Oh, always.
Yeah. So again, I'm cautiously optimistic because of McGregor and I like him, but for the series as a whole and this direction and including Hayden Christensen, again, you know, I did not like him. I thought he was terrible in Attack of the Clones, but
let's be fair. Attack of the Clones is a really bad script. And
oh no, it's absolutely terrible. Oh, this
really poorly written
because everybody was bad in that for the most part. But he was terrible in that. He was so wooden.
Yeah.
And again, a lot of that's on him because, look, you're an actor. But to say all of it's on him is not fair and it's not true either.
Okay, so I've seen him in a bunch of other things. And he had just come off a movie called Life is a House where he rocked it, right? And a lot of these actors are only as good as the director that they have in front of them. And George Lucas, while he's an amazing storyteller, is an average at best director.
Yeah.
And you know, when you look at the original trilogy, the best movie is Empire Strikes Back. And that's because it was directed by, you know, someone else.
Yeah. And so, I mean, but again, with that being said, I did like him in Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
I thought he was fine in that. Not great, but I thought he was fine.
Again, problematic movie with some poor story choices, poor writing, poor dialogue. Natalie Portman just mailing it in like she tends to do in genre movies. So,
But so I'm cautious about that. Just because of how the setting and just how they're going to make this a captivating series. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I agree. I'm right there with you. All right. So let's get into Westworld, season 3, episode 8. The episode is titled Crisis Theory, and the tagline this week is "Time to Face the Music," which is pretty appropriate. I really enjoyed this episode. I think the rematch that we got between Maeve and Dolores was really cool and answered the question in my head as to why did Dolores put herself in the old body, the old style host body,
yeah,
like underneath. And
right,
she explained it to Caleb perfectly. She said, when they made us more human, they made us weaker. And it's like, okay, what are you talking about? And then she took that katana strike to the forearm.
We were built to last.
And yeah, we were built to last. And she just shrugged it off like, what? And I know I'm jumping kind of way ahead here, but how cool was it when she was just kind of putting herself back together, pulling out the flesh out of the bags, and like, you know, putting it on like a glove, and like when she's like, you know, squeezing it tight so she's making sure everything's
putting
in
it
there.
Together like, put it together like Legos.
Yeah, right. It was pretty awesome.
So before we get through, I must say the first half of this show episode, I was thoroughly disappointed.
Really?
It dragged on. And I know you said you thought the rematch was cool. I actually like the dialogue between them in the rematch,
yeah,
more than anything. I thought the choreography overall from the fight scenes and just the action pieces were a little bit messy. It did not come close to what we saw in their fight, you know, the previous episode, which was incredible.
So I feel like it had to be messy because there were the mercenaries running around.
Well, no,
like,
when I say messy,
problems.
I mean, not, I don't mean in a good way.
Okay.
I mean, because we talked about Extraction last week, there's a dirtiness to the choreography and Extraction that is appealing.
Yeah. Okay.
It was
okay.
Like a lot of the choreography in this one was stiff and just the cuts weren't crisp like they were in previous episodes.
Sure.
And then I'm just sitting here. I remember like Sunday, I'm sitting here watching it like, oh my goodness, is this whole thing going to be like this? And then the second half happened and I was relatively pleased there. And again, we'll get into more. There were a couple segments that were just emotionally just hit the right notes with me.
So I want to talk, let's talk about Caleb real quick. I got the overwhelming feeling of like Project Mayhem from Fight Club towards Caleb this week with how everybody came up and like, yes, sir, you know, we'll protect you. We'll get you there, sir. You know, and then getting Ash and Giggles showing back up as his right and left hand woman and man. And then the whole riot thing was kind of, I don't want to say off-putting, but it was kind of just, it didn't make, I don't know, like.
The riot was another problem.
I think William explained it when he was in the hotel with his lawyer drinking the $20,000 bottle of scotch. This isn't chaos. This is this is babies whining or whatever it was.
I did like that.
So that was a great line. I really liked the choices that Caleb was presented. And here's my question. Did she actually give him a choice to turn off the world and hit the reboot button?
This is, and I'll ask a question back to you. If he thinks he had the choice, does it really matter? At least for Caleb.
Well, no. This is the thing, right? This is the whole idea of free will. Did she maneuver everything to the point where his only choice to be was we keep going the route we're going, and people die, people get hurt, people blah blah blah, or I put that trump card down on the table and I say, all right, game over. and I reshuffle the deck. I feel like he had that choice, and he took it because he knew it was the right thing to do.
Right.
Especially after his conversation with Serac once he was, you know, captured.
Yeah, and one of the things I really like is when, and again, we'll get a little bit more into Dolores. Like, I love her, the bookend of this episode with her, but how she was talking about how he was, how did she, I can't remember how she put it. But she, at one point she says, it doesn't matter what you did. All that matters is what you become. And we see that, you know, all this time he's been in the park before.
Right.
With, in Park Five,
Park
where
five.
They would train, yeah, where they would train, you know, the soldiers.
Call of Duty Land.
It actually makes sense if you think about. I love that Call of Duty Land.
and he's a good man. Like, he's not a villain, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're led to believe because of what Rehoboam did to him. You know that he's actually a bad guy, but
Dolores, he has that too.
He has.
Am I the bad guy?
And he does. But Dolores chose him for a reason, because when they were doing their training exercise and they were done, and it's like, all right, guys, get some rack time. The one dude's like, hey, we're here. Let's get what all these rich bastards pay for free. And, you know, the whole series, like the whole episode, they were showing how it was kind of like, you know, is what's he going to do? Cause he's unbuttoning his jacket. Is he going to like hop right in and, you know, go to town on a host? But he ends up like, you have your orders. We have the right thing to do. And then it turns out Dolores was one of those hosts.
Yeah. Well, he says to the guy, who's like, yeah, but we're not them.
Right. And he made that choice. Right.
Right.
He like right there, he made the choice, even though he's one of those outliers that is, you know, capable of the ultra violence and, you know, someone who's there to destabilize the world. He made that choice
mm-hmm.
to not do the wrong thing. And right. So I think just the way I'm interpreting this, and this is just, you know, my mental baggage that I bring with me to the show. I feel like he made the choice because this was the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was like, you know, people can keep fucking the world, or I can step in and be like, no, this isn't what we're supposed to do.
This isn't who we are.
Yeah. So
we're better than this.
Yeah. I mean, God, Aaron Paul was great this season. He was so conflicted, and, you know, he didn't have a ton of dialogue. But at the same time, you know, he was a huge presence, and yeah, I really, really enjoyed him. And I really hope Ash and Giggles are back. Like, it didn't look like Marshawn Lynch got killed when he got shot in the riot.
But I don't, and again, we'll get more into this. I don't know if it's just the way this ended, especially the post credit scene. I don't know what time frame this is going to take place in, or if we're going to go to a dual or multiple timeline. Like,
yeah, are we going to go back to the season one, season two, multiple,
or like The Witcher?
Yeah,
like, you know, where,
well, I mean, you look at season one had three very distinct timelines. It had Williams,
yeah,
past,
yeah, it actually did. Yeah.
It had Williams present, and it had Williams future, and
right.
You know, it was. And it worked. I think they did a better job of the multi-timeline thing in season one than they did in season two. But season
Absolutely.
Two was also condensed into a two-week time frame and real-world time, you know, that they told over the course of 10 episodes. But yeah. Okay, so Dolores and Hale, Charloris, Hale Loris, whatever you want to call her, had their little coming to terms of not being friends anymore. We got to see who the last Dolores Ball was, and it was my boy Clifton Collins Jr. rolling up as the Desperado Lawrence Gonzalez, which was pretty cool. I liked where Dolores went this week, and her end was so heartbreaking because the one thing she had was all of the memories of all of her lives.
Yeah.
And then they systematically took those away from her.
So, and this is the thing that I loved how this episode began, like with her, you know, talking about when I saw the world for what it really was, I realized how little beauty there was in it. And it was kind of a callback to season one and the early season twos, like when, she, you know, she's out in the plane and you're wondering, you know, she's talking to someone, but you just don't know who.
Right.
And I said this, I think it was last week or maybe the week before last, where I was saying that I think this, from everything, her arc is going to end or should end this season.
Yeah.
And that's what we get. And that's when she's talking to Maeve, and then we kind of realize that's who she was talking to.
Yeah.
And to your point, you know, she tried to hold on to those good memories last. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, you're ripping memories from someone, a host or a human, it doesn't matter. And it kind of bleeds into what we experience with Bernard when he goes to see his ex-wife, Lauren. Or it's not actually, it's Arnold's ex-wife, Lauren. Where, you know, you have those memories, and what does she say, Lauren say to him? She says something about, you know, if I keep moving, I could find the light again. Mm-hmm. And cause when he was like, he said, I was trying to forget him.
Right.
And she said, I don't understand that, you know, because if you forget somebody, they're gone. But if you can keep that memory alive, they're still with you.
Right.
And that really plays into what the Dolores experiences, and, you know, just watching, I mean, I loved her arc and like just the season itself. And I loved how they ended it. Mm-hmm. And this is why I hope they kind of, for this version of Dolores, at least.
Right.
And again, I don't know if Evan Rachel Wood's going to be back for next season.
I mean, so I think.
Or how they're going to bring her back.
I mean, they can. They could bring back that body and take the pearl out of Clifton Collins Jr. and put it
in her. That would be fine to me.
Which is fine. Or, you know, they kept the host making, they saved the host making data for a reason, right? So, you know, perhaps there is a way to bring her back and she'll be a different version. And she'll probably be closer to the Dolores Abernathy waiting for the stranger to pick up the can. But yeah, it was really beautiful. And then, Bernard's story was, it was fascinating to see. Like, it really wasn't that far off of when Bernard had died, or when Arnold had died. Right. I mean, she was only 70. That's what they said. They said they made her look like a 70-year-old woman, and like, you know, I knew right away it was Gina Torres,
she's
always great. You know, but the scene with the two of them, they had so much just like chemistry and you know, that scene, like I couldn't take my eyes off of it. And go ahead.
I think that kind of, you know, making amends in that scene, even, you know, because he's not Arnold, but he has Arnold's memories to some extent. Because remember when Clifton's Dolores gives him the halo to go into the Sublime, he says he's not going to use it. And I wonder, like, how much that speaking with Lauren,
right,
taking that weight off of his shoulders allowed him to say, okay, you know what, I'm going to do this.
Well, he said something earlier in the episode when Lawrence and the mercenaries showed up, right? After William shot Stubbs and took off, he pressed the button and he said, remember yourself.
Yeah.
And
right.
I think that's what happened with Lauren, is he got to remember himself and all the conflict he had about who was Bernard, who was Arnold, and where did they meet? What is that Venn diagram of these two men? and she put all of that into focus. So like we've seen the divergences happening throughout the season with the Rehoboam little white corona of an eclipse. And I think finally his divergences went away, and so now it's a perfect black line around a white circle.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like between like, you know, Dolores's goodbye and well, Bernard's goodbye to Lauren. I mean, those to me are the two emotional tight, like the emotional like weights of this or strengths of this episode.
I think when you look back as a whole, especially with Dolores, this is the strength of the season. Because Dolores has never been a really very interesting character. She's always had her motives have always been somewhat questionable as to why she's doing what she's doing. And we finally got the answers to that. And the fact that she did not keep the key in her head, that she trusted.
She didn't trust herself.
And that she trusted Bernard, I think, was really telling. And you know, everybody kind of assumed that's where it was. So it wasn't like a surprise,
right.
but all right. So the last thing I want to talk about with this is the man in black with William and, his journey to Dubai to find and kill the hosts. And he runs into Charlotte who
I cannot wait to see as the antagonist for season four,
right,
by the way.
Right. As the big bad, they say. She kept her arm all scarred up as a memory.
I love that. Yeah.
So did you ever watch Pitch Perfect?
That's the first two I saw.
Okay. When Bumper throws the burrito at Fat Amy, and then after the fact they're in the bus and they're driving and Becca leans up and she goes, "You got a little burrito behind your ear?" And she's like, "Oh, I'm keeping it there. It fuels my hate fire." That's all I could think of when I saw Charlotte's arm, like still burnt and unfixed. But she's got the Dubai factory just like going, like, you know, it's going to be host versus humans next season for sure.
Now, back to the man in black.
Yeah.
I can honestly see why Ed Harris said he wasn't too keen on his role this season.
Well,
I honestly, to me, it was a very, and again, I think it was necessary. Some parts of it were necessary. Don't get me wrong, but I didn't like it. I like this as far as him as William, the human William, I'm all for the man in black as a host. But I just didn't. There's something about it, I just did not like it. I wasn't a fan of him consistently. And again, it might be his character, but I don't know. Just the whole, well, I'm the good guy. I'm going to save the fucking world.
So here's the thing. Is William was never the good guy.
No,
never.
He wasn't.
Not
absolutely
even when he
not.
Was young.
No, he wasn't.
And the thing is, even like as a kid, as, you know, the Jimmy Simpson version, as the Ed Harris version, as the man in black. What we have now is the distillation of William's personality into the man in black, which will coincide with the movie version of Yul Brynner's character, the gunslinger.
Yes.
So I think this is where they're going with that. So the gunslinger is this unstoppable killing Terminator robot machine.
And that's what I'm saying. I like that. He's going to be Charlotte's, you know, right hand man.
But
so
William all season long was a red herring for Charlotte.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. And when he said he was going to save the human race. No, you
no,
were never.
No,
gonna
we
save
we all knew that. Yeah. He's so delusional. Like it's the whole delusions of grandeur.
Yep. His level of just hubris is on a Mace Windu scale that is heretofore unseen in most characters.
So, I mean, that was to me the weakest aspect, like from a character standpoint. And then again, Stubbs, he didn't do much. But yeah, Dolores is. I loved how the episode bookended with her.
Yeah,
you know, and we didn't talk about Maeve. You know, she makes an interesting choice as well.
So Maeve, does what Maeve does, and Maeve is the hero. Yeah. Maeve is a hero. Maeve is there to save the day. Maeve overcame the Serac Rehoboam
inhibitor
duo,
or whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever they put on her. I thought the Serac being controlled by Rehoboam was interesting.
I'm still conflicted about that. I don't know if I like that or don't like that.
Yeah.
That's one of those things. I think I need a little bit of time because
so he wasn't a host, right? Like everyone was thinking he was a host, but
no, he wasn't. No,
he was. He said it himself. I just listen and I do what I'm told.
Yeah. He gave up his, he gave up his right to choose.
Yeah.
Yeah. He gave up his right to choose. And again, with him listening to Rehoboam in his ear, it reminded me of that series I told you about, the Scythe series, mm-hmm. because the Thunderhead, which is the AI in this series, ends up marking it. Speaking, this is perfect because, you know, we talk about the outliers in Westworld. Mm-hmm. Unsavory people in this world wouldn't be able to talk to the Thunderhead.
Right.
Well, after something bad happens, the Thunderhead just marks everyone in the world except one person as unsavory, huh. and he's the only one that can talk to him.
Yeah.
Talk to him.
Yeah, I mean that right there is what's happening. And it takes Dolores giving up everything to go in and control and kind of wrestle that control away so that Maeve has the opportunity to do what Maeve does best and, you know, bring order into the chaos or the light into the dark, if you will, as happened during the sword battle scene where the lights went out and, you know, she cut mm-hmm. them po humans up while she was, you know, kind of Swiss cheesed a little bit there. I'm really interested to see scenes with Tandy Newton and Aaron Paul in season 4. I'm really interested to see how he reacts to Maeve, who is a much warmer, more nuanced character than Dolores, who is all control or who became all control, all, you know, piss and vinegar, all fire.
Maeve has no problem telling you what she thinks.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so the last thing is the very end. Well, so we get the post-credit scene with William, and then the man in black robot kills him, by the way, slits his throat, spoilers. As Charlotte looks on and she goes, "Oh, you're going to save the world, all right? Our world."
Right.
Which was very melodramatic and like mustache twirling. I'm going to tie you to the railroad tracks now. but the other post-credit scene is a dust-covered Bernard wakes up in the motel room
after going to the Sublime and shutting off.
Right. So who knows how long? Obviously Stubbs died, right?
Like he has to have,
like, because he was saying, like, "I'm gonna put you in the cold. It'll keep the flesh from rotting and you know everything." And he killed Stubbs instead of helping Stubbs first and then going to the Sublime, which, like, what was the hurry? He just let Stubbs die, and I'm like,
yeah,
okay, like
that's just what, yeah, that was for plot convenience right there. That's just
a Bernard thing, like, you know, that's just the way Bernard is. But leaving on that note was kind of interesting when he wakes up all covered in dust. But my question is, if he shut down, what's feeding that flesh? How is that flesh staying alive?
Yeah, because it is organic, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, it's like the Terminator. So anyway, I enjoyed this season thoroughly. I watched every episode at least twice. I watched a couple three times. I'm so excited for more. I don't know how you felt about the season as a whole, but I'm giving this like an 8. Easy 8 out of 10.
I'd probably put 8's good. If the second half of the season finale was like the first half, I would have probably dropped the whole season to a 7.5 because it wouldn't have stuck the landing.
Yeah.
But it did. Yeah. I still had trouble with half of this episode, but the second half and Dolores's arc throughout made up for it. So I would give this season an 8.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it took me a while. It took me 2 episodes. I didn't really get on the train until episode 3. Mm-hmm. Once I got there, it's been a ride. Yeah. It's been a very fun ride. And yes, this, I would have to say the finale was a downgrade from the last 6 weeks, Yeah. But it's there's just so much depth that and excitement that the previous 6 weeks made. And this one wasn't a big fall off for me. It wasn't a complete dud, so I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
And again, I just love I love how they finished it up with Dolores.
Yep.
I thought that was a perfect way for that character to go out.
Yeah. Okay, so just kind of on the last note for just some production notes. It says here, while this episode appears to be the end of the Dolores character, Nolan and Joy affirm that Evan Rachel Wood is still set to be a part of the show's fourth season, though they were not at the point where they could talk about it. He said, Nolan says, from the beginning, Lisa and I wanted to make a show that constantly reinvents itself, that it could be a different show each season. It's important with a show in which death can be impermanent. These are robots, after all. To mark the occasion with Dolores, that version of her character is gone. The protests and riots in this episode were inspired by the 2019-2020 Hong Kong protests. And through happenstance, the episode aired in the wake of several anti-lockdown protests to the COVID-19 pandemic. This episode again received mixed reviews. I think a lot of these people who are like quote unquote reviewers for the show are upset because they had theories that didn't necessarily pan out, and they're not just watching and enjoying like we are. The initial broadcast, like I said, was 888,000. So.
Although, I could see why people could have some issues with this.
No, I get mixed reviews. I'm not. It's just, you know.
But,
The guy, Ben Travers from IndieWire, says, what should have been a game-changing finale filled with emotional goodbyes only proved how far off the rails Westworld has gone. And it's like.
And again, I had several issues, especially in the beginning. But emotionally, I didn't have any issues with. The emotional aspect of it,
so
especially with Dolores' character and Bernard.
So, right. So, talking about emotions and sticking the landing, Clone Wars season 7, the last four episodes, or what I'm calling Star Wars episode 3.5, Revenge of the Sith, the appendix. So, wow, talk about sticking a landing to close out a series with four episodes that. I watched as a chunk today, like in one sitting, which I hadn't done yet. God, I love it. I love it so much. From Ahsoka, from Obi-Wan and Cody running and hiding for like the battle droids. To Anakin just walking up and standing there and just using the Force to either move out of the way.
If you want to hide, that's fine. And let
I love this. This was great. And then the 501st hiding under the bridge and coming out with the Mandalorian jetpacks and the flying V. I was like, hell yeah, man. Let's do this. And then the whole Fulcrum tie-in to Rebels. Where it turns out Saul Guerrero was the original Fulcrum to the first meeting with, and I'm just talking about the first episode right now, or the ninth episode, technically, to Anakin and Ahsoka seeing each other for the first time and how much he cares about her. And he's like, what were you doing on this, on another planet and what is happening? And, Ahsoka's like, I don't got time for this. We got to get to business. I want to go episode by episode. So, old friends not forgotten. How did you approach this? Because I also had the second half that I want to talk about, but the first half is, I think, very, very important.
So, as you know, I'm into Rebels. I've watched Rebels from the beginning. I'm still, I think, three episodes before I got to get to three episodes before I'm done with it, I think.
Okay.
Now, Clone Wars, I've watched the first season and a half or two seasons. I can't remember. So that means I don't have that, that connection with the characters.
Sure.
And I know, you are all in for Ahsoka. She's one of your favorite, if not your favorite character in the Star Wars universe. I know you've said that before.
She's up.
So
there.
I don't have.
Like, she's definitely like in the top three. Like, I mean, she's no R2-D2. Let's be honest.
So I don't have that emotional like connection over the 6-7 years of this series that you do, and you know, probably I think you've read some books too.
Oh yeah, I read all the books. I'm a nerd, dude.
But even with that, said, this four pack of episodes was just amazing.
Yeah.
From just, and again, this is one of those things that I didn't get that. I got it from watching it on screen when Ahsoka and Anakin see each other for the first time.
Yeah.
But as you know, as a viewer, I didn't get that because you know I wasn't sure. I didn't see season five when she left. For
yeah,
the
you
first
didn't
time.
Know she left
but
the order and all of that.
But I did love that look on his face when he sees her in the hologram. Mm-hmm. He can't speak for about 10 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't even say anything.
Like, how often is Anakin Skywalker tongue-tied? But in that first episode, so when the Siege of Mandalore begins, right? And the Mandalorians and the clones are fighting together and jetpacking through and everything. And Ahsoka and Rex, who are, you know, just like, he's helped raise her, like her three dads, she, you know, it's three men and a little lady with Anakin, Obi-Wan and Rex who raised her to be just a badass force wielder. When she looks at him, he says, he tells her, "Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't think to get you a jetpack." And she's like, "I don't need it. I'll race you down." And I loved the next 2.5 minutes of animation that followed. And she's jumping from ship to ship. She jumps onto the troop carrier that is crashing. It's just it's on fire and saves
helps the trooper get out. Yeah, they can't eject from his seat.
Thanks, Commander. You know, like it was great. And then how she had a judicious use of using the lightsabers to stop herself from sliding down things.
Yeah, she did that a lot in these last four episodes,
which I thought was really cool. But then watching the like everything explode behind her, that was what the poster was actually at a celebration. Yeah, like it just kicked off, and then to end with Maul in the tunnels, all pissed off that it wasn't Obi-Wan.
And again, we talked about him earlier, but Sam Witwer, him as Maul is a national treasure. Just love his performance as Maul.
Oh, absolutely. So, and that's how that one ended. And so then episode 10 is called The Phantom Apprentice, which is just very apropos, right, to everything, where Maul actually he wanted to lure Kenobi there in hopes that he would bring Anakin.
Yes.
Because
and
he
the
had
funny thing is, just think about this. Like, if Maul was right. If none of this, like all of the chaos and this and just everything that happened after Revenge of the Sith, just think if he could have done what he tried to do.
Yeah.
Yes, he could have tried to take power, but he didn't have the resources or
well, he
the
does.
Cunning.
He has
but
he has the Shadow Collective. That was that whole thing with the Pikes and Paul Bettany's character in Solo, whose name just
he has that. Oh,
so he has the underworld. He's in charge of the underworld. Like Sidious, you know, kind of tolerated his use of the crime lords. But yeah,
I did.
The fight between them, I think
the music in the fight.
Yeah,
how it starts off with the drums.
Yep. Ahsoka talking to Obi-Wan. And learning that Anakin killed Dooku and hearing the name Sidious for the first time and that he's orchestrated the Clone Wars, but they still don't know who Sidious is at this point. But their fight. So he asks her to join him. He's like, "Hey, look, I had this dream. I had a dream. And this guy named Skywalker messed up the galaxy, as Skywalkers tend to do. And I want to kill him. So what do you say?" And she is so attached to Anakin that she goes toe-to-toe with Maul, who is a straight-up Jedi killer, and, you know, makes a Maul-sized hole in the wall when she force pushes him out of the throne room, which was great. But just the animation, the way they were fighting, her little.
Well, they did the Ray Park motion capture, and you could tell.
Oh yeah. So but when she's like, "Is this how you fight? Because you're lucky Anakin didn't show up."
And I have to say this though, in defense of him. It's so funny that this always tends to happen in Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Think about The Last Jedi when Kylo Ren was trying to get Rey to join him. Right. Or think of Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, yeah.
When Vader says, "Join me and we can rule the galaxy as father and son."
Return of the Jedi.
I love this little theme of this always happens where a wielder of the dark tries to, you know, say, "Hey, you know, we could upset the balance and we could really do things right."
Hey, come to the dark side. We've got cookies.
Yeah, it's nice over here. But I wonder how else we can go, you know, we can be murderific and, you know, all that good stuff. But I'm trying to figure out how much he was trying to kill her versus beating her down in order to maybe get her in a submission to a point where she's for a moment weak and, you know, accepts it.
I think
because
she wanted to accept it. You know, she wanted to say yes because she understands.
Yeah.
She understands the light and the dark. And you know, it's why she eventually becomes what's known as a gray. And she doesn't tap into the dark side like Anakin does. Mm-hmm. You know, but at the same time, she understood. And had he not, like, invoked the holy name of Skywalker,
That's what it was.
She definitely was on board with, like, hey, you know, there's definitely something wrong with the galaxy. The Jedi are not who they say they are. Let's do this. But their fight continues out into the dome, the Mandalorian dome there.
Onto the rafters and
that final shot with the troop carrier coming up and the camera pulling back and it's just her after they've taken Maul away is beautiful. It is like I want that like animation cell.
Mm-hmm.
So, or a lithograph of that. So it was so beautiful.
And again, he has her down. He has her, and then he tries again. And then like Sam Witwer, just the frustration when he gets captured, and he's just like, you just don't know what you're doing.
Right. Yeah,
I just love that. Was just incredible
when he's like, "We're all gonna die," you know.
Because he says before they start fighting, I love this line. He's like, "And I'm not gonna even try to do it with the way Witwer does." Right. He's like, "There is no justice, no law, no order, except the one is going to replace it."
Mm-hmm.
And that's just everything came to pass.
So all right, so then we get into episode 11, the penultimate episode. One of my favorite words, penultimate. Shattered. And Shattered is a goddamn heartbreaking, just, oh, awesome episode. But I'm gonna point something out. At the beginning of this episode, Rex and Ahsoka are talking to the Jedi Council about what's happening. And, you know, Yoda's like, "Oh, you helped us as a Jedi." And she goes, "No, not as a Jedi, as a citizen." And she's got news that Anakin is, you know, there's something funky going on with Anakin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And fucking Mace Windu, who is not responsible for the downfall. Who is not responsible for the downfall of the Jedi Order solely on his shoulders, but the hubris that he brings that other Jedi share, and the fact that if you're not a Jedi, you don't know as well as I do, is what led to the downfall of this very flawed organization that some schmuck from Naboo was able to bring down by himself. You know, thousands of years of Jedi just out the door because some dude from Naboo had a better way of doing things. Anyway, he invokes the whole, "Oh, well, thank you for your help, citizen." And it's like, dude, fuck you, Mace Windu. You're a piece of shit. you know, and it's like, all he had to do was say, "What do you know? You were a part of our order. We did you dirty. I'm gonna have some empathy. I'm gonna be a Jedi in this moment of what we're supposed to be. and I'm going to ask you the right question, or I'm going to let you actually speak, because Ahsoka would have told them had he not, you know, gone all diva on them.
Right. But no, they didn't. He didn't. So. And that's, and again, that's, it's funny that Maul, when Ahsoka says that, you're lucky Anakin's not here, and he said something along the lines of, I see you have the Kenobi's arrogance.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. And she goes, you have a lot, you're going to find out a lot of traits you don't like.
but yeah. And,
yeah. Oh, it was so cool.
And I always say this in, it shows like Game of Thrones, it did a great job in showing how one decision can just let off an avalanche of shit.
Yeah.
Like one decision.
Capturing Tyrion Lannister for no reason.
Yep.
Really, like Catelyn Stark and Cersei Lannister are wholly responsible for where the Seven Kingdoms ended up at the end of this.
100%.
For just making stupid mom decisions. Anyway, so they end up on a capital ship on their way back to Coruscant to deliver Darth Maul for questioning. Rex and Ahsoka have a really beautiful moment together on the bridge, and then Order 66 happens.
Execute Order 66.
Order 66. Rex tries to fight it. He really does. And, you know, I'm not gonna lie, got dusty in the house a little bit when watching the helmet shake and then drop, and then watching the pistols shake, and, you know, but goddamn, if Ahsoka Tano is not a what's the word I'm looking for? Genius. When she's on that table, on the, you know, on the tactical table, and they're all shooting at her.
And she looks up for a split second.
Right? And
yeah.
Well, because you notice they keep shooting and nobody's falling down. And she redirected all of their blaster fire to get up into the air docks, John McClane style. And I just saw that. I'm like, this is why I love this character, because of her ingenuity, because of the way she thinks on her feet and the way she improvises. And this is the best traits of Anakin Skywalker that we got to see for six seasons in this show. And this is the legacy of Anakin in a lot of ways, is Ahsoka Tano. And it's because she does not want to kill the other clones. She does not want to kill the clones at all, because she served with them. She loved them. That she, you know, she understands that they're human. Whereas like Obi-Wan and Yoda just go straight up murder bot on them, right? Like,
yeah. And I love her, you know, hesitation to do that, mm-hmm. because I think from what you're saying, that's part of her character.
It is.
So, I mean, that's true to her character. However, I love when they're trying to find, and she gets that inhibitor chip mm-hmm. in Rex and gets it out.
Yeah.
And, you know, they escape, but when he wants to,
well, that's, you know, in the next episode.
No, that's in the next episode. That's
so
the next,
in this one, so yeah. In this one, she's running for her life. She finds some droids to help her out. There's an R2 unit, there's an R4 unit, and then there's a chopper unit. And you know, she goes and lets Maul free, and she's that the thing that they have, like the conversation. Like, man, I want there to be a mini series of just the two of them, like off doing like buddy cop Riggs and Murtaugh style, like, you know, she's Murtaugh, he's Riggs, and
don't,
you know,
kill anybody.
Like, yeah, don't kill anyone. It's like, whoa, okay. But when she pulls him out and you know, she says to him, "I'm not rooting for you. I need you to do what you do best and cause chaos." And when he asks her for a lightsaber, and she turns and just gives him that sneer. Oh,
he didn't need one,
dude. That was as a vicious use of the force as we've ever seen.
Decapitated.
Yep.
Cut people in half. But yep. That was fall back.
When he pulled the guy through as the door with blaster
the
was closing, just to get the communicator off his arm. You know, the arm came with it, obviously, but. Yeah. You know, that's how that works when you have a build a figure stormtrooper like that. But yeah, it was really, really cool watching Maul. Like you said, he decapitated those two. He just split the one guy in half up against the wall. I was really surprised they showed as much of that as they did.
Oh, I was too.
But so, yeah, but no, she gets Rex back. She gets him. She traps Rex in the hall with a really good little trap and brings him to a medical unit, does some force mumbo jumbo and finds the chip. And so I've seen some people talking about this is the inhibitor chip is why didn't it show up? The clones did not know they had inhibitor chips. So there was an episode where Fives, the character that he tells her, like he gives her the clues to look up. Fives has the chip and it glitches and it goes bad. And when they scan his head, they're like, oh, he has this mass. They think it's a tumor. And it's the first time anyone has seen it. And the Kaminoans, they know about the chips, obviously, because they put them there and they're in on the plan. Or not all of them, but some of them. Anyway, I think some of them. But I don't think it's all of them. Anyway, so when she scans him and it doesn't show up, that's how it's supposed to be. Like, but my question is,
that would be too easy. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it Sidious using the dark side as he's clouding everything? Is he using the dark side to kind of hide this from the Jedi? Because as clones die and there's autopsies and things like that, there would have been an accidental discovery of one of these, or a clone gets his head blown off and, like, you know, part of his head. And it's like, hey, what is that sticking? What's that shiny thing in there?
Right.
But she does the chariot, you know, I'm one with the Force and the Force is with me, and gets Rex going with it. And it was just really cool the way she wanted to save her friend and mentor.
Right.
And I love the way the episode ended with the door, you know, about to fall.
Yeah. Yeah. That was that. And I like how they, you know, instead of waiting, cause I think if these episodes will come out on Friday and then they show the finale.
Yeah, well, because they did it for Star Wars Day on May the 4th.
Yeah, which was perfect.
So we can hop to episode 12, Victory and Death now. When that door opened, did you expect to see Maul?
No, I didn't.
I was kind of surprised. Like I there's a part of me that expected to see Maul there. But I'm really happy
Maul
he
was
didn't.
Too busy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maul was too busy going to the hyperdrive and ripping the hyperdrive out.
Yeah.
Like he does.
How very Gaten Starkiller of him, you know. So I mean that was Force Unleashed type stuff right there.
Absolutely.
Which was great. But yeah, that was so it was very, very cool watching him do that. And then as Ahsoka and Rex are working their way through the ship to the hangar bay, has there ever been a better duo working in concert together? I mean, this was like Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars level of teamwork.
Yeah, that choreography, how you know, the dance they performed with him blasting, you know, stunning troopers and, you know, her deflecting blaster bolts was... That was great.
I mean, this was like when Ahsoka and not Ahsoka, when Sokka and Zuko were fighting Azula at the island prison, and you know, Zuko is firebending and Sokka's got the sword, and they're kind of, you know, doing the same a similar dance where, you know, one is in front of the other, and then, you know, Sokka's moving in to try and make a killing blow. But it was beautiful. And the way they did it completely. And I don't know if you've ever watched. Do you watch the Star Wars Explained YouTube channel ever?
I think I'm subscribed, but I haven't watched anything recently.
So he made a really good point. Like, this is the most we've ever seen stun blasters used in all of Star Wars. But yeah, I mean, they're just going through it just stunning everybody. And she's, you know, they just work so well together. But yeah, and they get to they get to the control center and they open it up and they see the handiwork of Maul's destruction, that they're in the gravitational pull of this moon and they're going to die. Which is where we get to the line that you were just talking about before with Rex. And,
yeah. So what happens is that it's Jesse, right? He has all the troopers lined up and basically there's no way out. And Rex says, we're going to have to shoot through. And that's when Ahsoka says, we can't kill them. And yeah, even though I don't have the same connection as you do with these characters, when he's like, you know, these are my brothers and they're willing to kill me. Yeah. And then she just comes up to him and gently takes his helmet off. And you see that tear running down his cheek. Man, that was, it was a little dusty.
And so it goes back to when, like, he had the tears running down his cheeks when he was, you know, fighting the urge to kill her in Shattered.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so beautiful. And then they come up with the plan with R7 or L7. Was it L or R? I don't care.
I think it was R.
Yeah, R7 and Chief. I love that droid's name was Chief. But they end up Did you watch Spartacus?
Yes.
So when they went back to the arena to save Crixus and the other guy, and they set the arena on fire.
Yeah.
Like, that reminded me of that, like, scene when they were dropping the guys down, when they were, like, taking the floor out, when they set it on fire.
Yeah, dropping them to the pit, yeah.
Yeah, but because when the stands were falling down and the people were falling into the pit of fire. I know, it's just a really weird, like kind of...
That's a swerve right there.
But,
yeah,
but it was like, oh, hey, look, just like in Spartacus. So... But it was a great plan, and had it not been for Maul, they would have gotten away with relative ease. But again, Maul had to do what he does best and show up and wreak havoc. She almost got him. Did you notice when he grabbed his neck? Like, he felt the heat of that lightsaber tip.
Yeah.
You know, that was close. But again, the Starkiller thing, holding that ship in place for as long as she did.
If Rex didn't need her at that moment,
right?
Like, she might have just ruined his escape. She would have ruined his escape.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was so, cool. And then when he pushes her off, when he had pushed her off over the edge, you know, I felt like that little bit went on for just a little bit too long, because you knew she was getting back up.
Yeah, that was.
But
that's one of those when a show goes for, you know, suspense when it's not really suspense.
Right. So, but R7 took a blaster bolt to the head, and then
he had the warble.
Yeah,
the scream.
And then Chief and the R4 unit got.
They were gunned down.
They got by those murdering.
I mean,
clones.
They put they were giving up, and they were so, murderers, man.
Yeah, those clones straight up murdered those two droids. Murdered. Like, they were like, we give up. I give up. Don't shoot. Or pew pew pew, I guess is the case, maybe because it's Star Wars. And so they finally get away. Well, get to a point where they can find another ship, and it's one of the, like, I love the Clone Wars era style, the Clone Wars cartoon era style Y-wings with the solid, you know, engine coils in the back, unlike the, you know, the
right,
the opened ones from later on in the franchise. But when they're falling through, like, it was very indicative of her, you know, going to the surface of Mandalore. This was for a completely different reason. And it was for life and to get away and survive. I actually loved the action of her getting to the ship. And again, I read the Ahsoka book. So I knew her and Rex left a planet at the same time together. And that was a planet we've been to before, I think, with Rebels. But the end where they bury the clones.
I mean, oh man. Yeah.
It was it was such a really cool metaphor for the series and for these characters to say, hey, you know, we're saying goodbye. Like, we're putting this era of Star Wars to bed. And to me, this is the way the Skywalker saga ends, right? This is the, like, episode 9 is fine. I liked episode 9. But this is the end of the Skywalker saga, in my opinion.
Yeah. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, that shot, the very last shot where it shows the helmet mm-hmm. that was painted like Ahsoka.
Right.
You know, in the snow. It was snow.
Yeah.
That was just such a beautiful shot. But when Vader comes and picks up her lightsaber, do you think he believes she's still alive?
No.
Okay, so he thinks she's dead.
So she cuts off her connection to the Force, like kind of like Luke does. So she cut off her connection to the Force. Now, she occasionally would reach out and try and find Anakin, but Anakin's connection to the Force obviously had changed from being Anakin Skywalker to being Darth Vader and embracing right. the dark side. So when she connects with him in Rebels, when he's tearing Phoenix Squadron apart like it's paper mache and he's a baseball bat, like when she connects to him, that's when he found out she was still alive. And
okay,
but
I forgot about that.
She did not know that was Anakin yet. She didn't know it was Anakin until Twilight of the Apprentice, when, you know, she cut his mask off or part of his mask off.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
And I mean, that right there, and you know, yeah. So, but her letting the lightsaber go again, you know, she was so close to having everything she wanted again, to having that family, back. So yeah, it's just. Okay, so I will say that last shot of the clone trooper helmet with the you know, her Togruta markings and everything, I thought that it was a hole in the face at first. I had to pause it to really see that it was Vader. But yeah, it was. That's how you. That right there is how you end the series.
It's how you end the series. It's one of those that, and again, even with my limited connection to these characters and with the events that led up, all the events that led up to this, I was able to follow pretty well, and it still it still hit me emotionally, even without having to have that same connection that you have and all the other Clone Wars fans have there. Right.
And I will say, like, it was obviously some time had passed. This was not like this ship crashed and then Vader came to explore, because he didn't know. He had a bunch of other stuff going on. You know, he was getting put back together. He had some rebels to track down, and you know, this was just I'm really curious to find out how far, like, what the time jump was from her ditch and everything, because her lightsaber was starting to like patina and rust a little bit.
Right.
But yeah, like, wow. And when he lit it up, you know, and I almost wanted to see him bleed it and turn it red as a final nail in the Ahsoka Tano Anakin Skywalker master apprentice relationship. I mean, that would have been dark. That'd have been really, really dark.
Yeah, I think, but the way it ended was perfect. Yeah, that would have been, I think that would have been a little too much.
So, because I mean, like, when he changed, because her saber blades were green, right? Mm-hmm. And he changed them to be blue like his. And like, there's a lot of discussion online about, like, did he overstep? Like, did he, like, what was him changing her lightsabers to be more like his lightsaber, him overstepping his bounds as a friend, as a teacher, as, you know, someone who's supposed to be taking care of her and getting her to a point where she's able to take care of herself? Or was it his way of showing, like, you're taking a piece of me with you into battle, like, and I love you? You know, it's really it's really, really interesting, and I'm excited to kind of see where it all goes. So as far as like Ahsoka the White and everything later on.
But if she was a gray, wouldn't she be Ahsoka the Gray?
Well, she her cloak was her cloak was gray there. Yeah, when,
kind of like Gandalf the White.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. So you'll see. You'll understand what I'm talking about in three episodes. But yeah. All right. That was Clone Wars, man. This is a 10 out of 10. For these last four episodes, I think the first three episodes of season 7 were all right. The Bad Batch, they were fun at least. But nothing was really new. Those animatics had been out for years. The Martinez sisters, I think, were a horrible addition to the Star Wars canon, and those three episodes probably would have been better suited to be the Sons of Dathomir story animated. But so we got a little more Maul. But, you know, it is what it is. Clone Wars went out on a really high note. It would have been nice to get more than 12 episodes, but I'll take what I can get. I will say these four episodes opened with the classic Lucasfilm logo, the John Williams Star Wars theme, not the Kevin Keener Star Wars theme. The title cards were red instead of yellow, and the usual philosophical lesson in the episode title appeared in red as well. So, yeah, it was very much in line with the Revenge of the Sith episode 3 stuff. And there is a supercut of Order 66 on YouTube already. You can go to the Infos Podcast Facebook page. It's right up there near the top. I'll actually pin it and check that out because it's a lot of fun because it includes this, obviously episode 3, and Fallen Order.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's like it's only like 2.5 minutes long. So but yeah. All right, man. So anything else?
Now, oh, and by the way, I'd probably give this a 9.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like giving 10s out.
No, and I don't give 10s out very often, but these four episodes
for me is
a 10. Mm-hmm.
And again, going back to what I said before, I think me having more of an emotional connection would have probably, if I would have followed it over this last decade and a half, or almost decade and a half, because Clone Wars, the movie, came out in 2008. If I had followed all of this up until now, I think that would have pushed it over the edge, closer to a 10 for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I absolutely love it. And I'll watch. That's one of those I'll watch again, and I can watch. Like, well, as a movie, like just all four of them.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I did. I really like. Hey, if anyone from Disney Plus is listening, like, put these out as like just one
episode. Put it together as a movie with no cuts.
Yep.
Not having this wait till it goes to, you know, this a next episode will play. Just unfiltered as a movie.
Just do like where each episode ends. Just do the title card of, you know, part four, part one, part two, part three, part four, and like leave it at that.
Yeah.
With you know.
Right.
The fun little sayings like, you know, bird in the hand is two in the bush and things like that. all right, dude, we've been going for an hour and a half. So, yeah. Cool.
Yeah, we talked a little much this time around.
That's all right. We had a lot to talk about this week. It was fun. All right. So next week we are going to talk about Upload, and we're going to make it an all Amel podcast. And we're going to finally talk about Code 8. So,
yeah. So do your homework. Upload is on Amazon Prime. Yep. It just came out last week, May 1st. I think it came out last Friday.
Finished it today. So, 10
episodes. I finished it Sunday.
Yeah. So I didn't start it till yesterday. So
yeah.
But
okay. So you pretty much did the same thing I did.
Yeah. I couldn't stop watching it. I finished Better Call Saul, and then went to Upload, and like, yeah. So, good stuff. Good stuff. So I'm excited to talk about that next week. All right. On that note, we will see you guys next week. Bye.
See ya.
The Infamous Podcast is recorded in Kings Mills, Ohio, just north of Cincinnati, with new episodes out every Sunday. You can find more information about the show online at infamouspodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as at Infamous Podcast. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, iHeartRadio, or your favorite podcatching app. If you're enjoying the show, consider giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast, or check out our Patreon at patreon.com/infamouspodcast for our new tiers and rewards. The Infamous Podcast is hosted and produced by me, Brian Tudor, with music provided by Michael Henry from meetmichaelhenry.com. You can find me on social media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as @BrianTudor. So, whenever you're listening to the show, have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever it is, and we'll see you next time. Later.